Hi, this is Tim Hernandez. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. I'm really excited about our guest today. He's the wonderful novelist Matt Mendez, who just came out with his groundbreaking YA young adult novel titled Barely Missing Everything. It's out with Simon & Schuster. Matt is somebody I got to know back in 2009, 2010, around there. At that time, he had just barely released his first book of short stories, and he kind of just skyrocketed from that straight to the big time here with this book. And no doubt, you're going to really enjoy the contents of the book, but also the contents of this interview. Matt is just a really genuine writer who's from El Paso originally, went to Austin High School here, and so we'll get into some of that. That's coming up right now on Words on a Wire. Like his characters, Matt Mendez grew up right here in central El Paso. He received an MFA from the University of Arizona, and he's the author of the short story collection Twitching Heart. He lives with his wife and two daughters in Tucson, Arizona. Barely Missing Everything is his debut young adult novel. Matt Mendez, welcome to Words on a Wire, my friend.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely, and you're calling us from your home in Tucson, right?
That is correct.
Wonderful, Tucson, Arizona. How long have you been there?
Oh, I've been here since 2000, so forever now.
Gosh, that is forever.
I know.
Jeez. Well, I'm going to ask you what got you there in a little while, but I want to just kind of get right into your... Man, I honestly can't say enough about this breakout novel. Now, I call it a breakout novel, but, you know, I know that you have a collection of short stories that you wrote that came out prior to this. What was the title of the previous collection? It slips my mind right now.
It's called Twitching Heart. Came out in 2012.
Twitching Heart came out in 2012. That's right. And that's around the time I think I met you for the first time, was around 2012, right?
Yeah, that was a few years before. I think it was like 2009. It was in New Mexico, in Las Cruces.
In Las Cruces. No, was it Albuquerque?
No, you're right. It was Albuquerque. That's right.
In Burke. That's right. And that's where we first met and connected. And I was like, man, this guy's a cool guy. And you know, we started talking a little bit there. And I knew and I became aware of your writing at that time. But, you know, for me, man, for me now, you know, with no disrespect at all, Barely Missing Everything, this YA novel to me is the breakout book for you. You know, just in reading, it's just it's an incredible accomplishment.
Oh, thank you.
No, I can't say enough about it. As you know, too, I posted something a few days ago on my social media, on my Facebook, about the book, because I think everybody needs to go out and read it. I feel like there aren't enough voices, especially in YA books like this, like yours. And you know, we'll get a little more in depth about it all. But I guess I just want to ask you, how does it feel to have this book out? Because I know you've been working on it for a while now.
I've been working on it for close to 10 years now, so I'm super excited for it to come out, and it's been a really long labor of love because I work full-time with another job, so I write in the margins of my life, so having this book come out and having the reception that it's getting has been just super exciting and just a real positive feeling.
Yeah. And, you know, I know you're a family man. So, and as a family man myself, I can tell you, I do know what you mean when you say you have to write in the margins of your life. And that's a great way of putting it. And that's true. You know, I would write like after my kids would go, when they were younger, they'd go to bed like at 8 or whatever. And then I would write till like midnight or something. You know, I was like, you have to just write wherever.
Exactly.
Still tired from work all day. But you know what? That's just a testament. And, you know, I mean, we're grateful for it. It's a testament to your discipline and to your craft. But also we're grateful that you wrote this book. I'm going to ask you in a minute here, I'm going to ask you to kick us off with an excerpt from the book for our listeners, but I want to actually take a minute to kind of describe the book through the blurbs that you received. One of them is actually a starred review from Kirkus, and they write, "In this novel, with a deep sense of place and realistic dialogue, characters who are vivid and fallible add deep psychological meaning to a heart-wrenching story. At once accessible and artful, this is an important book about Mexican teens holding on to hope and friendship in the midst of alcoholism, poverty, prejudice, and despair." That's one of them. The other one is a blurb by Jason Reynolds. If you're not familiar with him out there, he's a New York Times bestselling author of the book Long Way Down. And he writes, "There are moments when a story shakes you, when it fills you with a strange combination of razor blade and feather, a concoction that simultaneously tickles and slices inside." Dang. And that is exactly the description. I think when I read that, I said, yes, this is what the book is doing. It's tickling you and slicing you and cutting you up. You know, how would you describe the book for our listeners, like in your own words?
I don't know if I could do a better job of describing it as Jason does.
You feel that's accurate then?
Yeah, he's such an amazing writer, and I wanted the book to be, you know, something that represents life in El Paso and kind of the Rescuache feeling of growing up El Paso, where it's, you know, prideful, and it's also tough, and it's also funny, and it encompasses, you know, the complicated life of, border life.
Right.
And to me, his words kind of encapsulate that, where it both, you know, tickles and slices where it's tough and it could be hard, but it's also hopeful and it's also very funny.
Yeah.
And that's what I wanted to kind of capture in the novel.
Yeah, and I think you did. I think you're absolutely successful in capturing all of those. In fact, would you mind then giving us a little sample of that for our listeners?
Sure, I'll read you a little bit of Chapter Juan.
Nice.
And I'm kind of, it's people who know me kind of get tired of it, but I like puns, so there's a lot of puns in the book.
I think the humor in the book is great. It's throughout, it's consistent, and I found myself often relating to it, so it was really good, yeah.
All right, here we go. Juan Ramos was dead. His game stiff and clumsy from the jump. It was January, the season already beyond the halfway point, and every game had been part of a parade of embarrassments. The air inside the gym hung thick and sour. The ventilation system going out before tip-off and making each breath like swallowing a hard-boiled egg. Juan stood at the edge of the huddle as Coach Pell ripped the team for not playing smarter. The Austin Panthers point guard stood doubled over and tried to catch his breath. He had plunged his team into a hole after only 5 minutes, turning the ball over twice in a row and going 0-for-5 from the field. Ramos, take a seat. Coach Pell yelled, mean mugging him from the middle of the huddle. You're showing no heart out there. Whatever, Juan said as he took a seat on the bench. Heart was never going to matter. The game had swirled on the toilet the moment Juan's mother, Fabi, and her boyfriend, Ruben, strolled inside the gym during layup drills. The clicking of Fabi's heels echoing across the Panther Athletic Center, the pack, and inside Juan's head, causing his attention to pinball from defensive assignments and running the offense to wondering why his ma had showed to the game in the first place, a thing she never did.
And if you are just tuning in to Words on a Wire, that is the voice of author Matt Mendez, who is reading from his brand new YA novel titled Barely Missing Everything. And for all of you fronterizas out there, all of you who are along the El Paso borderlands, this book is situated right here in El Paso because Matt is a native of El Paso. And Matt, were you born and raised here in El Paso?
Yeah, I was.
Okay. What high school did you attend here?
I went to Austin High School.
You went to Austin High School, yeah.
Right there in Central El Paso.
In Central, that's right. I know. And, you know, I mean, I'm not from here, as you know. I'm actually from California, but I've been here now for 5 years. And so it was really exciting for me, as always, you know, as just a reader and a fan of books, to be able to know and see these places that you mentioned throughout the book. So El Paso is very prominent, obviously, throughout the book. And yeah, just a great job on that. One of the things I wanted to ask you was about the inspiration for the book. I know you probably might get tired of hearing this question, but it is always intriguing for me, especially for a YA novel, when it's sort of a coming of age, I think, in some way. You know, tell me about the experiences that informed the shaping of this book.
Well, obviously, I owe a great deal of this book to just my upbringing and my experiences growing up in El Paso and going to Austin High School and just, you know, growing up in Central El Paso.
Right.
And how, like, the seed from the story actually started, you know, long after I had left El Paso. And I was at a writer's conference. I was at the Bread Loaves Writer's Conference way back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
So I just had a short story accepted for publication with Pank, which is this great little literary journal.
Mm-hmm.
And the editor there had sent me some edits and was doing a little bit of fact-checking.
Mm-hmm.
And that short story had a little piece on it that had to do with the death penalty.
Hmm.
I was on the Texas Department of Justice website, you know, sending her a link to show the editor some facts on there.
Right.
And while I was on that website, I found a death row inmate who had my exact birthday on there, year and day.
Wow.
So just out of curiosity, I clicked on the link, on his link, and I found, you know, just a whole bunch of information on him because, you know, Texas is pretty brutal as far as sharing all that information
sure.
on there.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I... coincidentally, you know, he's from Texas. He's from a small, poor little town, you know, kind of different from El Paso, but, you know, same kind of socioeconomic
mm-hmm.
town. And when he was admitted onto death row, it was the same month and year that I, you know, finished my undergraduate work at the University of Arizona. So there were just these kind of weird coincidences, you know, with his life and my life. And it just started these questions like, how does this man end up, you know, on death row in Texas? And how do I end up in this writers conference in Vermont?
Right.
You know, what happens in our lives that, you know, cause these huge differences to occur? What happened?
Right.
That's when I started, you know, doing research and investigating my own life. And it just kind of snowballed from there. And the result is this 10-year journey of writing this novel.
And is that, would you say that that's then the influence for the character of Mando in the book, Armando?
Yeah, it's the seed of where Mando comes from. Right. It doesn't have a lot to do with him, who I ended up becoming kind of pen pals with. Me and him exchanged letters and kind of became friends. And, you know, we talked, or we didn't talk, but we exchanged letters and we shared each other's stories with each other.
Wow, that's interesting. So that was laid some of the groundwork, the background for what started to inform some of the stories in the book.
Absolutely.
You know, let me just to kind of encapsulate this for the listener, the struggles of these characters, particularly Juan. First of all, there's Juan who wants to be a basketball star. And that's from the chapter you just read, chapter Juan. And then there's his best friend, JD, who also has his own aspirations and dreams, and he wants to be a filmmaker. And then there's the character of JD's mom, Fabi, who has this past sort of relationship with the character Armando, who is in prison. And that's who we're talking about here. And, you know, one of the things is that the struggles that each of these main characters are going through, they're so real and relatable. And it felt to me as I was reading this, you know, because they're also not just real and relatable, but so authentic, so genuine, that I couldn't help but feel like this is a very personal story to you in many ways. Not in the way that, you know, this is your story per se, but in the sense that these lives, that this tale is just close to you in one way or another. I mean, is this accurate or no? Am I a little off on that?
No, that's fairly accurate. I would say like I'm pretty close to like JD's story, and his upbringing is very similar to my upbringing. So like my senior year in high school, my parents went through a divorce. So his feelings of like, you know, becoming a ghost in his family, where he was watching his family, you know, kind of die in front of him, and him feeling like he was haunting this old space, is something that I'm very familiar with and kind of felt was happening to me. So that was able to put a lot of my own feelings and memories onto the page when it comes to JD's story. And
right.
I also had this dream of being a filmmaker when I was his age having zero idea of how to go about it.
Yeah. There's a passage in there somewhere where you talk about all the things that he has acquired for filmmaking, his filmmaking dreams, but like he's never done anything with it. Like he just has this like...
Right. This whole secondhand filmmaking thing that he had going on, I can totally, you know, identify with this. And like having just zero idea, there's this school has no arts program.
Yeah.
None of his friends are interested in anything to do with filmmaking. There's no mentor to turn to be like, hey, how do I get started?
Right.
So he's just at square one and just stuck at square one. And that's something I could completely identify with at his age. It's like, what do I do?
Yes.
So, you know, this idea of joining the Air Force to one day pay for film school seems like a logical step to him.
Right.
Seemed logical to me, too, at the time.
Right. And
which is what I ended up doing.
That's what I was going to say. And then that was your path, right? You ended up going to the military, right? And how long have you been in the military?
Still in.
Oh, you still are.
That's correct,
Wow, I didn't realize that. So you've been in there now for how long? Like 20 years or something like that?
It's 20 plus.
20 plus, man. Well, thank you for your service. I'll just say that here now, you know. But also, you know, I think that you, of course, I know you already know this, but you've got a long career ahead of you in the writing business now. So, you know.
Yeah,
that'll be your act two maybe or something. Who knows, you know. would you say then that that some of the characters, obviously the main ones especially, are then composites of, you know, not only yourself, but of others that you've known around you?
I would say some other traits, if not like, you know, parts of the plot or like the narrative itself, but just, you know, people's personalities and people's influences on the characters are parts of people I know, and just behaviors and manner of speaking, and just some of the things that have frustrated people's lives are definitely in the story.
What's one of the things that you most love about this book? You know, not necessarily just the process of writing it. I mean, it can be that too, but just this book. What's one of the things that you most love about having produced this book?
I think it's the complexity of life, you know, in El Paso and in the Southwest. I think this part of the country is so mischaracterized and not, you know, understood at all. It's like this really... You know, is El Paso the safest city in the country, or a most dangerous place in the country? It's like it's talked about in these really broad stroke generalizations, and it's like super frustrating to me as somebody who's lived in the Southwest, you know, most of my life, and is from El Paso and raised there. Like this, the way people from outside of the region talk about the Southwest and know very little about it. So to me, I'm really proud of this book and the way captures one little neighborhood in my perspective of that neighborhood, and tells a really complex story in a nuanced and, you know, subtle way.
Yeah. And in doing so, you know, it becomes El Paso and even central El Paso specifically, but El Paso in general really becomes a microcosm, you know, for any town in America, to be honest with you. You know, I felt the same way when I first ever read Sherwood Anderson's Winesburg, Ohio, or, you know, things like books like that, where they use a sort of a composite community. Of course, in your case, El Paso is a real place, you know, but it does become very much so a realistic portrait for youth in America in these situations. One of the things I really noted that I loved was your dialogue. You know, it's just so impeccable, man. And that's because that's one of the most difficult things I feel to write is dialogue. But it's quick. It's to the point. It's poetic at times. It's funny. It's witty. You know, does dialogue just come natural to you? Or did you spend hours? And please tell me you spent hours laboring over it.
So many hours, Tim. So many hours.
It just comes natural to you, doesn't it? I'm sure it does.
The dialogue, I think, is trying to be funny is hard. It's super hard. I think it's always easier to like to be dramatic or to be serious. And so to me, I worked really hard on the dialogue to make the back and forth and the repartee between the characters to be believable and to be funny and to not be, you know, feel forced and to feel corny. So I'll be honest, I did work, you know, really hard to make it feel natural, because I think, you know, readers and especially young readers can, you know, spot a fake right away.
That's
so that's
right.
Something you have to put a lot of time and attention to make sure it sounds and reads organic.
That's right. And it does. Every beat of the dialogue, the rhythms of the dialogue and the language, and then the word choices, the things that these characters are saying, from the mother to everybody. It's just all the dialogue. I couldn't find a flaw in it at all. Not that I was looking out because I was so immersed in the story, but I was just like, wow, this is it's just an engaging read. And, you know, I think at this point, for our listeners out there, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Words on a Wire, and we are speaking with the wonderful YA novelist Matt Mendez about his new book, Barely Missing Everything. And so, Matt, would you mind then sharing with us another excerpt?
Sure. I'll read the, so this alternates point of views, and I'll read the opening chapter for Fabi's point of view. It's chapter 4.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Fabi sat on the toilet and peed, holding a thin plastic stick between her legs. After freaking out all weekend about Juan, she had wondered how bad the week was going to be. And now Monday morning was starting off this way. This was her third pregnancy test in 3 hours. The first showed a positive, a blue plus sign in the test window. The second was unclear. A pair of parallel lines meant to signify positive or negative, but instead looking like a blob of pink. Her period was a month late, and she'd been off birth control for way longer than that. She hadn't been with anyone in forever. And getting pregnant wasn't something she was worried about, not even after meeting Ruben. When she finished, she placed the stick on the toilet tank next to the dusty basket of potpourri. The overhead fluorescent light buzzed and flickered, like it always did, and the flooring needed to be redone, mildew seeming to have replaced the grout between the cracked and mismatched tiles. The faucet dripped nonstop. Complaining to the landlady, a woman named Flora Midas, would be a total waste of time. Flora still hadn't replaced the window in her bedroom that had slipped from its frame, or looked into the leak stain forming on the ceiling above her bed. It had started small, just a swirl, but grew into a flared brown hurricane. Bobby washed her hands and sat back on the toilet, waiting for the digital test. A little bit expensive to spell things out for her. If positive, the word pregnant would appear across the viewfinder.
And that is the voice of novelist Matt Mendez reading from his brand new book, Barely Missing Everything. And Matt is also an El Paso native, went to Austin High. Is that right, Matt? Did I pronounce that right? Is that Austin High?
That's right.
Okay, Austin High School here. Grew up in the central area. I was going to say El Centro. That's the subject of my book. So I'm like,
right?
You grew up here in central El Paso area and currently now lives in Tucson, Arizona. And like I said, this is a fantastic book, Barely Missing Everything. One of the things I really liked about this as well, Matt, is the textures within the book itself. You know, there are letters, as you referred to earlier, there are letters written. There are these text messages between the teens. There are Google searches. There's algebra. There's all kinds of just textures happening in language. And I couldn't help but wonder, the writer in me couldn't help but wonder, what the editing process was like working with your publisher.
They were really, really great with all of it. They loved all the different kind of, writing choices I made there. And The only part that was difficult was the algebra. I'm super terrible at algebra, and they actually fact-checked and did all worked out all the math problems.
That's
and
great.
Figured out that I had done some of them algebra incorrectly.
And
which
you know,
a little embarrassing.
I honestly thought, man, this guy must really love math because there's some seriously in-depth algebra going on in here.
No, I really don't love algebra.
That's
so I thought, what was the most anxiety-producing thing I could think to put on Juan and have everything? What would I be the most afraid to have my entire life be put on? And I thought, oh, well, an algebra test would probably be something that would give me the most anxiety. So that's what I decided to put on Juan. And it turns out that I would have failed that test because my algebra was all incorrect.
but it's interesting the way you use it, because it's not just straight algebra. You use it as a way for him to sort of make sense of his world or his situation, you know? And I'm looking for it here. I don't know the page where it shows up on. But, you know, that to me was a really original move on your part. And I thought that was great. One of the other things then, too, is, you know, with a YA novel, and they're starting to get a little bit more, I think, they're starting to take a little more risks, publishers are, with YA novels than I think when I tried to attempt to write a YA maybe over more than 10 years ago. But, you know, there's so much graphic language as well and very raw sort of scenes, scenarios, and situations in this book. And I'm wondering, did they ever have to ask you to sort of scale back on any part of it, or are they just really encouraging about, you know, getting the authentic voice down?
You know, to be honest, they really didn't asked me to change the language is too much. I mean, a lot of the editorial choices that they requested as far as language goes was more about amplifying what was already there. So it was like the same kind of choices I think any editor would have made is like, hey, this is a little too much as far as like, you know, salty language goes.
Sure.
you know what I mean? It's like, hey, this is just a little much for the page. Just take some of this out so we can, so it has more impact of language that's already there.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but it was never more of like a sense, like the feeling of being censored.
Right, right. No, and you know, I mean, I don't get that. I mean, this book, just like I said, every word in here matters, and it's perfect and it's authentic. I think it's great. You know, one of the things then is, you know, I wanted to have so many questions, and I'm getting the cue that there's like 3 minutes left, so I got to kind of cram this all in here now. But one of the things I wanted to talk with you was about the readership, the target audience for this book, you know, because I know that one of the hardest demographics to reach, or at least as it's been documented, one of the hardest demographics is young adult male readers and Latinos especially. You know, and I'm wondering, is that your target audience for this book? Or even if not, what do you hope a sort of a young teenage Matt Mendez living here in El Paso today or anywhere in the country will get from the book?
That's the audience I'm going straight for,
nice.
That audience, the young, you know, Latino, well, young Latinos in general, and young Latino males who don't have these kind of books, because oddly enough, I had ended up in a creative writing class while I was in Austin and still decided I wanted to be a filmmaker. And I think, you know, looking back, a lot of that has to do with it never seeing, you know, I didn't read a Tim Hernandez as a kid. I didn't even read Sandra C. Snedeles until I was in college. So I had no exposure to, you know, Latino writers ever. So like the idea of being a writer and telling the stories in my head was something that I'd never, you know, put together until I was, you know, an adult.
Yeah.
And I think of, you know, Latino youth see themselves and see their stories as important and worthy of study and see their future. It's like, hey, I can be a part of letters. I can write my stories. This is who I am and I'm important. And they can see themselves, you know, participating and being part of the canon. I think it's vital and important. And I would love to get these books into the hands of young kids. And that's, to me, the most important thing that I want to do with this book is, like, you know, hand these to every little young person and be like, here, read this book. You're important. Your lives matter. Your stories matter. And that's mostly what I want the book to do and what I want to be a part of doing.
And no doubt, I think that you will be successful in this. The book comes out on March 5th. And really quickly, do you have any plans to do any kind of book events here in El Paso?
Yeah, I'll be a part of the EPC Spring Arts Festival in April. So I'll be down there in April, and I'm hoping to do a reading while I'm down there too, either at Barnes & Noble's or at the Literary Bookstore.
Yeah, you got to do it at Literary. Let me know how I can help, my friend. And
will do.
Yeah, and we're really excited for you here in El Paso. And of course, just everywhere in general, I encourage you all listeners to pick up his book, Barely Missing Everything. The author is Matt Mendez. Matt, thank you so much for being with us on our show today.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for having me.
And that wraps it up for this edition of Words on a Wire. We'd like to thank our special guest, Matt Mendez. You got to check out his new book, Barely Missing Everything. It's out with Simon & Schuster. We'd also like to thank our wonderful producer, Stefania, back there. And we hope to see you next week, same time, same place, right here on KTEP 88.5 FM.